Revolutions Per Minute is a weekly radio show from the New York City chapter of the Democratic Socialists of America, recorded live at WBAI 99.5 in Brooklyn every Tuesday at 5. RPM is about doing the work to build a democratic socialist future. Every week, hear the latest news, analysis, and organizing experience from the minds and hearts of activists fighting every day in NYC. Join the movement at socialists.nyc.
You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute, live from the new WBAI studio, a socialist radio show and podcast from members of the New York City Democratic Socialists of America. The Democratic Socialists of America is the largest socialist organization in the United States with 56,000 members nationwide, and NYDSA is the biggest chapter. We are run by our 5,500 plus members and organizers who are working together to build a democratic socialism in all five boroughs. I'm Lee Zishi. I use she, her pronouns. And today we are going to be talking about our energy system. Last week, the Governor Cuomo appointed Public Service Commission approved Con Ed's rate hike, which will raise our monthly bills for millions of New Yorkers to invest in frack gas infrastructure and also fund a worker strike contingency fund. And then earlier in the week, National Grid also presented in North Brooklyn on a controversial frack gas pipeline. So our corporate utilities are up to a lot, but New York City DSA is too. And today we are joined by Andrea Gwynn and Daniel Golden of the New York City DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group to talk about their campaign for public power and give those corporate utilities the boot. But first, we have the headlines with Simone Norman.
A panel appointed by the New York City Council and Mayor de Blasio will propose a bailout for thousands of taxi drivers trapped in exploitative loans. The drivers, most of whom are immigrants, face rapidly mounting debt, a result of industry leaders selling taxi medallions at artificially inflated prices and creating a massive speculative loan bubble. The Department of City Planning and Mayor's Office rejected the Bushwick Community Plan, which may spell the end of the city's Bushwick rezoning proposal. In its first 4 years, Mayor de Blasio's mandatory inclusionary housing program has created only 2,000 housing units. The plan was designed to produce between 12,000 and 80,000 units over 8 years. In light of Governor Cuomo's announcement that cities and localities will have to cover the state's Medicaid budget shortfall, Mayor de Blasio warned of anticipated cuts and longer wait times to city services, especially in its health and hospital system. Governor Cuomo and State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli reached an agreement to restore oversight powers on SUNY and CUNY contracts. Cuomo previously stripped that authority from the Comptroller's office in 2011. And in local election news, Assembly Member Rodney Bichot is set to replace Frank Sedio as head of the Brooklyn Democratic Party. Bichot has received large donations from groups her bills have helped. Brooklyn Borough President Eric Adams outraised his competitors for the 2021 mayoral race, ending the filing with over $437,000, compared to the City Council Speaker Corey Johnson's $329,000 and Comptroller Stringer's $294,000. In the last 6 months, Governor Cuomo raised $4.5 million for his reelection in 2022. Rafael Espinal has dropped out of the race for Brooklyn Borough President. And finally, New York State Senate Democrats are welcoming contributions from charter school lobbyists ahead of the 2020 election.
Our daily headlines are brought to you by The Thorn, an incredible weekly newsletter by New York City DSA Electoral Working Group, covering local politics and radical activism. You can subscribe at thethorn.nyc. I'm Lee Zishi, and you're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI. Today, we're talking about what our corporate utilities, Con Ed and National Grid, have been up to in the past week, and also how New York City DSA is organizing to get rid of those same corporate utilities and replace them with a public power system. And today in the studio, we have Andrea and Daniel. First, we'd really like to kind of introduce our guests to our audience. So if could you talk a little bit about how you joined DSA and or why you joined DSA and some of the organizing you've been doing since joining?
Yeah, sure. So I've kind of been a democratic socialist since I was in eighth grade, but I didn't really get involved with DSA until I think a lot of people did after the election. I was involved in Ithaca, the Ithaca chapter of DSA for a while, and then when I moved to Brooklyn back to Brooklyn in 2018, I started organizing here. And I kind of was jumping around from working group to working group. I think a lot of new members do that, but I really settled on the Eco-Socialist Working Group after a town hall we held in Astoria in July. It was a town hall about our public power campaign, and we had a number of speakers. Jumaane Williams spoke, and this was right after the blackouts had happened that were happening in Flatbush and Canarsie. And I just heard from a lot of people who had been affected by the blackouts and also just by Con Edison. And a lot of them had been affected by Con Edison in the same ways that I had been affected by Con Edison. I one time got a bill for over $1,000, because Con Ed had been estimating my bills instead of actually reading my meter. And after a year, they finally read my meter and said, "Oh, actually, you need to pay $1,000. And it was a honestly terrifying experience. I didn't have that money. But more importantly, I really saw the effects that our fossil fuel industry and climate change have on working class people of color in this city right now. So I was teaching, I'm a teacher, and that last summer I was teaching in Sunset Park. And at that town hall, I found out that there is a natural gas peaker plant in Sunset Park, literally blocks away from the school where I was teaching. And the school where I was teaching was actually literally already under the BQE. So my students were just getting totally poisoned. And I've read the statistics on student achievement in areas with like really low air quality. Like, it's like the increasing air quality for students, installing air filters is the same, does the same thing as like pouring millions of dollars into these schools. This has a real tangible impact on students. And as climate change gets worse, air quality is going to get worse. So I really saw that this was really just having an effect on my students. And I saw the public health effects that the blackouts were having, and really became aware of this relationship where we have this we have a failing infrastructure that we just have not been investing in decades. And on top of that, we have climate change, which is pushing that infrastructure to its limits. And that is creating a crisis. We're really in a moment of crisis. And that town hall really opened my eyes to that. So after that, I got a lot more involved. We're planning another town hall in Flatbush that I've been really involved in planning. And it's been great. I've been really impressed by the public power campaign so far.
Yeah, and we'll definitely dig into that a lot more later in the show. How about you? How did you get involved in DSA? And can you talk a little bit about the work you've done?
So similarly, I joined DSA after Trump won the election in 2016, so I've been in it for a few years. I think I'd always loosely identify it as a socialist, but if you quizzed me about that, I probably couldn't tell you exactly what that meant. I grew up a military brat, so I think the first thing that radicalized me was really seeing like my family and people I knew going to war and really discovering that our country prioritizes wars, and particularly wars for oil, over even like the most rudimentary of social welfare for its people. So I was really infuriated by that, but I hadn't really been exposed to like Marxist thought or even like grassroots organizing or labor history for most of my upbringing. But I knew I had to do something after the Trump election, and DSA seemed like an organization that was really about confronting like the problem at its root, in confronting like capitalism as a whole. So I joined and got involved from there. I think I first contributed as a designer because that was the first thing I knew to do, because I do that in my sort of professional capacity. But after that, I got really deeply involved in the Queens branch and was able to work on a lot of campaigns there. I first worked on the AOC campaign, and then we worked on the No Amazon campaign together after that, and finally the Tiffany Caban campaign. And it was this really beautiful thing, actually, to experience two substantive wins, almost three, after what felt like a lifetime of really losing. I think I had always wanted to get involved in climate organizing. It's always been something I've been deeply concerned about, but it felt like such an overwhelming problem. I didn't know where to start. But I was really inspired by this public power campaign, and I think I got involved maybe like 6 months ago, also around the time of our Astoria town hall. And from there, I've really been dedicating my organizing in DSA to that. I'm helping to organize a town hall in Queens as well, in this eco-socialist working group in Queens, and really doing whatever I can to contribute to this campaign. But yeah, I think AOC, with her Green New Deal resolution, was really the first thing that gave me hope in actually building a movement powerful enough to confront the climate crisis and to confront, like, our entire extractive economy and everything that's at the root of it.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit later on about AOC's support of public power. But before we do that, we want to talk a little bit about, and we'll definitely talk more about Con Ed, their rate hike, and what they're actually trying to build in the Queens community in a little bit. But first, we're going to actually talk about the other major corporate utility in New York City, National Grid. Last week, National Grid presented to Community Board 1, which is in North Brooklyn in East Williamsburg, about a pipeline that they're that's currently under construction. National Grid wants, they've already raised our rates, $188 million over the last 3 years to pay for the first phase of that pipeline, and are now asking for another rate hike. They want our bills to go up even more to pay for the second phase, which is, or the fourth and fifth phase, which is currently under construction in Bushwick. Before they presented, there was a press conference, and there was a lot of DSA members there, including Alvin Pena, who represents, who works for Representative State Senator Julia Salazar, as well as Wes Higgins, who is another member of the DSA Eco-Socialist Group. So we're going to go right now to a clip from that press conference last week in East Williamsburg.
Gas pipeline through North Brooklyn makes no sense for the public. Right. And is intended to benefit National Grid shareholders over ratepayers and the planet's health. This pipeline is an irresponsible project that will lead to significant negative impacts for the surrounding community and will also quickly become a stranded asset. We need geothermal, solar, wind power, and the rest to be the foundation to the 21st century's energy systems. We need to look forward. It's time for the old relics of yesterday not to be leading the way for tomorrow. It's time for National Grid to hear the community when the community says enough is enough.
I ask most people if they would love to have a green society that puts the collective well-being of all of us over the extractive system hell-bent on climate destruction. I think they probably say yes to the first one. So why isn't that happening? It's because the system is rigged. We're expected to play by rules we did not create, enclosed and privatized boundaries that the public cannot cross, and all while we're standing alone against powerful interests, but not anymore! National Grid, in other words, is a front to democracy. It's time we stand up together. Over the past 3 years, National Grid has raised their monthly bills and dug streets in Brownsville to install this pipeline. They wasted $108 million of ratepayer dollars, and now they have the gumption to ask for $185 million more. All while leaving us with a stranded pipeline eventually into the future. But there is an alternative. Public power fights for the right to renewable energy for a livable planet. National Grid fights for the bottom line. Public power fights for the right to a vibrant city that we can co-create. National Grid fights to tear up our streets. Public power fights for the right to the future. National Grid fights to lock us into fossil fuels. The fossil fuel industry lied to us for decades, and National Grid is now lying to us now about frack gas being clean and safe, but it is not. National Grid's business model is dependent on delivering a potent greenhouse gas stronger than CO2. So we need public power because we must address the root cause. Capitalism is systematically undemocratic and unsustainable. It will sooner let the ecosystem collapse than risk collapsing on itself, even though it's doomed to do both by its very being. We must, as a democratic people, instead build a future for the many, not the money, because there's really no alternative. We must fight, and we must fight together for a decarbonized, decolonized, and democratized future. And I think we're ready. Let's go!
That was Alvin Pena of State Senator Julia Salazar's office and Wes Higgins of the New York City DSA Eco-Socialist Working Group at a press conference before National Grid's presentation. They were calling on National Grid to halt construction of their pipeline. They both talked a bit about how National Grid is going to profit off this pipeline. Can you talk a little bit about how the corporate utilities currently operate in New York City?
So Wes really like hits the nail on the head. It's really like a rigged system. So the way it works is New York State essentially divvies up parts of the grid and gives them to different investor-owned utilities, right? So our investor-owned utility is Con Edison, and really they have in return for like being granted a monopoly over New York State's grid, they're supposed to provide cheap and reliable service. I think those are its legal mandates, which we saw they have not. We have the second highest municipal utility electric rates in the country. And also we experienced like thousands of people experience blackouts this year, and that's only going to get worse. But these companies are essentially, they're owned by their investors, which means they have an incentive to give their investors bigger and bigger profits. Like Con Edison in particular pulls in about $1 billion a year. Their revenue has been going up year after year, and it's been granting like bigger and bigger dividends to its shareholders. So really it's prioritizing its own shareholders over the planet and over its own ratepayers, over our safety, and over our right to energy. And it's a regulated process. So we have what's called the Public Services Commission. Every state, except for Nebraska, which actually has 100% public power, has an equivalent of this. And it's supposed to regulate the process and keep these companies accountable. But what we found, particularly through participating through the rate hike process, is that they're really lobbying on the side of the investor-owned utilities. This is a process that's really not designed for regular people to participate in, and they really have no incentive to bring us lower rates or to bring us the reliable, clean energy we need. And one thing is that every time when Con Ed files for a rate increase, they get like 9% of that, they get a guaranteed what's called a rate of return on infrastructure, on new infrastructure. So in this rate hike in particular, they got $211 million to build new fossil fuel infrastructure, and they're guaranteed a 9% rate of return on that. And in this rate hike, they got an even bigger cut of that. Now I think it's like 9.75%. So they're really incentivized to build new fossil fuel infrastructure, and really are not incentivized at all to like lead us to the green transition that we need.
Yeah, which is very interesting, because at that meeting, National Grid, they claimed that this pipeline that they're building through Bushwick, East Williamsburg, and Greenpoint, and they've already put in Brownsville, was not a pipeline. They also said that they're leading the transition to clean energy. New York City DSA Eco-Socialist tweeted out that they were gaslighting the audience. What's your kind of response to these corporate utilities, you know, claiming they're not our adversary, that they're on our side, they're working with us to get to renewable energy?
Right. If they were truly on our side, gas companies in particular, they would have to euthanize themselves. So this is like they have a fundamental conflict of interest with the transition to renewable energy and to a sustainable economy. At that hearing, they kept saying that it was not a pipeline, and then accidentally slipping up and calling it a pipeline in their own testimony. And this is a company who was recently caught in a huge scandal, by the way. National Grid has been, you know, lobbying for this pipeline called the Williams Pipeline, which communities organized to stop for a second time this year. And as soon as that didn't go through, they pretended like suddenly there was this energy shortage, and it was so bad that the state legislature and then later Cuomo actually had to get involved to hold them accountable, because the regulatory process is just not designed to keep them accountable in like a truly effective way. So they were essentially lying to New Yorkers, saying we're facing this energy shortage, refusing to hook up cooking and gas to thousands of people. They were bold enough even to go around to NYCHA, which is, you know, has faced years of disinvestment, and as a result of that faces a $3 billion boiler crisis, where tenants like are regularly facing heat outages, don't have like a right to heat. And they went around to NYCHA and said that this was because of a gas shortage, which is absolutely a bald-faced lie. The reason that they don't have reliable heat is just because of disinvestment and because of the deficit that NYCHA faces, because we haven't funded it for years. But these are just obfuscation tactics at this point. They'll say anything to pretend that they're like, that they're participating in the transition, but they're fundamentally opposed to any transition. Like, it's 2020. We shouldn't be talking about building new pipelines that we're going to be paying for decades when legally we're supposed to be zero carbon by something like 2030. And if we're serious about averting climate catastrophe, we wouldn't be building pipelines in 2020. We'd be serious about looking into things like renewable heating. So there's really just no reason to trust them. And I think it's like purely an obfuscation tactic at this point.
Yeah, and they actually directly contradicted their claim about NYCHA needing gas at that community board meeting and said, you know, like 99% of the time it's a broken boiler or something. It has nothing to do with us, National Grid. So there was definitely a lot of contradictions that they made at that meeting. And we're seeing a lot from the same things from Con Ed. So we're going to talk in a second about the Con Ed rate hike. And then after that, the campaign to take over these utilities in public power. You're listening to Revolutions Per Minute on listener-sponsored WBAI in New York City, broadcasting at 99.5 FM and streaming on your favorite podcast app. To connect with us after the show, you can email us at revolutionsnyc@gmail.com. You can also find us on our website at revolutionsperminute.simplecast.com. And as always, we're on Twitter with those great tweets at NYCRPM. Today, we're talking about what our corporate utilities, National Grid and Con Ed, have been up to in the past week, and also the campaign to take them over and have public power here in New York. So last week on Thursday, the Public Service Commission actually voted to raise our rates and approve Con Ed's rate hike, which includes things like a pipeline expansion in Queens, pipeline expansion in the Bronx, millions and millions of dollars to extend the life of a liquefied natural gas facility in Astoria. And so we have a clip from Diane Berman, who is one of the public service commissioners. All of the public service commissioners have been appointed by Governor Cuomo. So it's very fair to say that, you know, this is a Cuomo-controlled entity. Here is Diane Berman last week on why she was approving Con Ed's rate hike.
It is striking a balance between protecting the utility's customers, providing fairness to investors, enabling the long-term ability of the utility to provide its essential services to customers who rely on that service. The second is that it has to be consistent with the environmental, social, and economic policies of both the agency and the state. And the third is that it produces a result consistent with the range of possible outcomes from a fully litigated proceeding. It is my job as an economic regulator to ensure that after careful deliberation, I make a decision that helps to give clear signals that are measured and sustainable. I am very concerned about the low ROE. I think that may have a negative effect on customers, and so we really do need to be very mindful of that. It is not necessarily a positive for Con Ed in having such a low ROE.
So that was Diane Berman, who is one of five public service commissioners. Diane Berman and three other of the public service commissioners voted to approve Con Ed's rate hike. Only one public service commissioner, Tracy Edwards, decided to vote against it. But since it was a 4-1 vote, that rate hike will now be in effect. And so Diane Berman, you know, didn't bring up climate change as one of her concerns. She didn't bring up, you know, that these could be stranded assets. Her biggest concern was that Con Ed's rate of, she said ROE, which is the rate on equity. So what they're going to be making off of their investments. Her concerns were that was too low. What is your response to Diane Berman, you know, saying Con Ed is not profiting off enough from this rate hike?
Yeah, I think it really just, it shows that this entire system is like not set up in any way to seriously challenge the status quo. So DSA, for example, NYC DSA was what's called an intervener in this rate hike, but the entire process is kicked off by Con Ed, like, nicely asking to raise its rates on ratepayers, and in this case, so it could, like, raise its revenue through new infrastructure projects. But there's really no way to challenge that except to say, like, no, please, no rate hike. There's no way to, like, challenge, like, why we have, like, sold off and commodified a public resource like energy. I don't know. So, like, through, like, if this process was truly democratic, which is something we're trying to like accomplish through the bills, she wouldn't have a job on this public services commission. Like we wouldn't be spending our time lobbying against things like a $211 million rate hike for new fossil fuel infrastructure, a rate hike that publicly subsidizes things like a strike contingency fund to union bust its workers, that pays for things like Con Ed's trade associations that also lobby on their own behalf to state legislatures to keep the status quo and to keep us locked into fossil fuels into for-profit utility companies. And things like lobbyists that actually fight against us. So I think it really just, like, for me, like, lays bare how undemocratic the entire process is.
Yeah, and what's interesting in that room, too, is, you know, it's not only Con Ed who is represented and our ratepayer dollars go to pay for their lawyers. It's also the Department of Public Service and New York City who agreed to this rate hike, and our tax dollars go to pay for them. So literally all our money is kind of going to fight against us in those rooms. And there was actually a lot of protesters in that room when Con Ed approved the public service, or when the Public Service Commission approved Con Ed's rate hike. And Diane Berman, you know, got out from her high chair and came down and got the state troopers to escort people out. So, you know, that's how the public service is representing the public. But DSA has actually been talking a lot to people. You mentioned, Daniel, the town halls. There's also been a lot of canvases for public power. What have you been learning when you're actually out there talking to the public? How do they feel about Con Ed?
So it's actually really interesting. Most people have either kind of fall into two really broad categories. The first group is people who don't really think at all about Con Ed. It's just the company that they have to pay every month. Same with National Grid. And then the other bucket is people who really hate Con Ed because they've either had a blackout, or their bill has, they had a surprise bill that went up, or their power was shut off. Which happens to a lot of people. I think there was 2 million shutdown notices in 2018 alone, which is an insanely high number if you think about that. So what I have noticed though is that, people who really dislike Con Ed they dislike it in the same way that most people dislike the subway, right? Like, Con Ed is just something that exists. It's this company you pay and they provide you with really mediocre service. And when something happens, they almost see it as their fault, right? Like, it was my fault I got the estimated bill because Con Ed never came over to read my meter, right? It was my fault for not pressuring them enough or something like that. They see their problems really in isolation. They don't really think of Con Ed as, well, a for-profit company. In fact, I don't think a lot of people even know it's a for-profit company. And a company that's supposed to be regulated by the state. And they don't see it as something that can change, something that, they don't see our energy system as anything that could be different, which is, I think, what the idea behind this campaign really is that we are saying that our energy system can be democratically controlled. Our energy system can be completely renewable. Our energy system can be decarbonized. It can be decommodified. It can be democratized. It can be decolonized. And that's something that I think is a really powerful message that when people hear it, they go, oh, huh. You mean I don't have to, you know, be beholden to this private company. I don't have to wait for some person to show up to read my meters who might never show up. I don't have to worry about getting a blackout on the hottest day of the year. And that's something that I think is really powerful. And, you know, it's a message that when I talk to people about it, it really resonates with them. We've done a lot of canvassing and we meet a lot of people who were really affected by these things. I met a guy who, he had been affected by a blackout over the summer and he had his power out for 36 hours, which is a really long time. And during those 36 hours, he was actually buying ice from the corner store and chucking it into his fridge because his mother's insulin was going to go bad. So I say to him, I said, oh my God, that is so awful. I am so sorry you had to go through this. And then he looks at me, he just goes, oh yeah, it's not a big deal. You know, last year we had our power out for 6 days. And that was because of a manhole fire, which was actually something that happened to me. There was a manhole cover near me and my power was out. And that was just, when you hear these stories, you realize that the problems with Con Edison and the problems with National Grid are really widespread. These are two companies that are really failing in their jobs, and they're companies that are really locking us into, a lot of really dangerous climate damage. I mean, you know, the approved rate hike, that's climate denial right there. We think about climate denial as something, you know, Republican senators do, you know, bring in a snow globe or bring in a snowball into Congress or whatever. But that's not what climate denial is. Climate denial is, you can say, oh yeah, I believe in climate change, and then not actually do anything to stop it. That is also climate denial. The PSC was exhibiting climate denial. Con Ed is exhibiting climate denial. National Grid is exhibiting climate denial. When you don't look at the actual impacts of climate change, you are being delusional. And that's something that I think we really need to call out. And that's what this public power campaign is all about, calling out.
Yeah, I mean, New York City, where we have Mayor de Blasio, who claims to be a climate leader, you know, supported Con Ed's rate hike. And one of the main things they fought for, Con Ed has, and National Grid, has all this leak-prone pipe. You know, their pipes are very old, they're leaking. And the city's position was that Con Ed should replace the leak-prone pipe in the floodplain first. You know, so they're recognizing that, hey, climate change is a thing. It's going to flood these pipes, but let's spend hundreds of millions of dollars investing in the infrastructure that's causing climate change. So, you know, there's a huge disconnect there between the rhetoric and what's actually happening, you know, what the policies our government actually supports.
And it's totally ridiculous because, you know, I've spoken to a lot of politicians about this, unfortunately. And, you know, we say we don't need these pipelines. Stop building these pipelines. There are alternatives. And the you know, kind of the politicians and other detractors go, yeah, well, we're in the future. Yeah, we have things like heat pumps. We have things like electric heating, but we have to build that first. Right now, we have a need for natural gas. And so we need to build this pipeline now. But no one's ever actually talking about building out those alternatives right now so that in the future, we won't need these things anymore. We always talk about how urgent we need this pipeline, how urgent we need all this frack gas. But we don't actually put the resources in to begin that transition process. And that's something that is really just comes down to the fact that Andrea is totally right. If National Grid wanted to take climate change seriously, they would euthanize themselves. And there is no future for natural gas in a decarbonized world. It's just simple physics.
Yeah, so let's talk about that vision of the future that doesn't have, you know, us spending the next, you know, 3 years and hundreds of million dollars going in the wrong direction, which is what the PSC just approved and what National Grid also wants to happen. DSA has been working with Assembly Member Robert Carroll on three public power bills. Can you talk a little bit about those bills and what they would do? What's the alternative vision from, you know, being beholden to National Grid and Con Ed forever?
Yeah, absolutely. So, we've been working with Assembly Member Carroll, who I just want to give a shout out to him. He followed me on Twitter today, so whoop, whoop. So we have essentially three bills that would take our energy grid and bring it completely under public control. So the energy grid is made up of three kind of distinct parts. There is generation. Those are the power plants that make your power, solar plants, gas plants, coal plants, whatever. Then you have transmission. Those are like those giant power lines that bring the power to distribution hubs. And then you have distribution, and that's your utilities like Con Edison that distribute out that energy. So what we really want to do is take that entire system and bring it completely under public control and public democratic control, right? We don't want to create like the MTA of energy, right? We want to make a system where the people who run it are democratically elected and democratically accountable. So we have three bills that will do that, and I can kind of run through them. So the first bill would basically make all municipal state-run and municipal buildings 100% renewable energy. So right now we actually have a public power authority. It is called NYPA, the New York Power Authority. It was created during kind of the New Deal era, the Roosevelt era. And so what this is calling for, this first bill is calling for all state and municipal offices to be powered by 100% renewable energy from NYPA. So not some private company, but from the state itself. We're going to get our energy from there. It's following the SUNY system already has a clean energy roadmap, so we're actually kind of borrowing from that, but speeding up the timeline. So we would be getting we want to have NYPA to be the sole generation source, the sole energy generation source for all state-owned and municipal properties by 2025. So that's a fast timeline, but that's a realistic timeline. And there's a lot of state and municipal buildings out there. The entire SUNY system, it's the largest employer. So that alone would just go really far in getting a nice big chunk of the economy powered by renewable energy. The second bill, which is the one I'm really excited for because I think it's really cool. Yeah, that's right. I think bills are cool. So this would allow NYPA to build renewable energy right now because of like quote-unquote deregulation that happened in the 90s. NYPA is not allowed to build any new sources of generation. They do have some older sources of generation that they keep that they're keeping up, but this would allow them to build new renewable energy generation, and it would give them the right of first refusal on all new energy generation projects, renewable energy generation projects. So they would get to, you know, and because NYPA can borrow money at a cheaper rate than private companies, this would allow them to actually undercut the private market. So it would mean that renewable energy projects would be state-owned instead of privately owned, which would be awesome. And this is really important because today Governor Cuomo in his budget address said that what he wants to do is have the Public Service Commission and NYPA get sites ready for renewable generation projects and then just hand those projects over to private developers, which is kind of insane. Like, he wants the state to just do the legwork for these renewable energy developments and just hand them over to private interests who can profit off of them. I think that's totally crazy. The public should be the ones benefiting from these projects if we're putting the work in. And also, you know, we're supposed to be getting 70% of our energy from non-carbon sources by 2030, right? That's what that's what New York State has set out to do in the CLCPA, which was a bill passed last year. If we are going to be building all of that renewable energy, what is the point of having private companies do it? Because they're just going to charge more to ratepayers. If we have NYPA do it, we could do it for a cheaper, and we could provide energy to consumers at a much cheaper cost. It really is a total no-brainer. So the other thing this bill would do, this second bill, is it would give consumers a renewable energy option on their electricity bill. So it would allow NYPA to sell energy directly to consumers. So if you're getting your electricity bill, you could actually check off, like, I want to get renewable energy at a cheaper rate than my fossil fuel energy. And that, I think, is something that's really cool. It'll allow for people to have a actual renewable energy option on their bill, on their electricity bills. I think that's great, and I think it would go a really long way to building up that renewable energy generation in the state. The last thing this bill would do, the second bill, this is all just the second bill, would ban for-profit ESCOs. ESCOs are kind of these energy middlemen that are really scammy. They were set up in the 90s during deregulation. A lot of them kind of promise that there's been a lot of consumer issues with them, and the state has been wanting to go after them for a while. So we're just getting rid of for-profit ESCOs completely. This would be a really big consumer advocacy win. The third bill is the big bill. It's the big kahuna. This would take over Con Ed. This would take over National Grid, and this would take over Central Hudson Gas and Electric. So it would do this through they would either kind of outright buy it or do it through buy their properties or do it through eminent domain. And this would in place of these companies establish a downstate power authority. So that means that kind of Westchester, that area, and New York City would have a new public utility. So no more Con Edison, no more National Grid, no more Central Hudson Gas and Electric. We would have the Downstate Power Authority instead. It would have cheaper rates, guaranteed cheaper rates, so your energy bill would go down because there would be no more profit motive, and the board would be democratically elected. So you actually could vote for the people who are in charge of your power company. How insane is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a completely different vision than what we have now. And, you know, obviously Con Edison and National Grid are not going to be very happy about that. And we know they have a lot of influence over our government. You know, both de Blasio and Cuomo have talked a big game about this, but then just, you know, rubber stamped Con Ed's plan. And then obviously Governor Cuomo has his own vision of handing over all this renewable generation for somebody to profit off of. Probably somebody who donates to his campaigns. So, you know, that's a lot of forces to go up against. So how, you know, what is the campaign like to actually get these bills passed? And how is New York City DSA building that power to take over our power. It's such a nice pun there.
I know, it's great. That's why I really love the public power campaign, because we're all about building actual public power and then also public power. But yeah, you are right. National Grid and Con Edison have really deep pockets. You know, Con Ed's been around for over 100 years, right? They've had just literally a century to build power. And they really are powerful state actors. This is going to be a really hard campaign. There's really no doubt about it. But, it's a big but, people are really mad at both Con Ed and National Grid. Both of these companies have not been doing their jobs in maintaining our energy grid and our gas infrastructure. And of course, there's climate change, which is rapidly becoming the most important issue for Democrats and people on the left, as well as, you know, people in general, because it's crunch time. So I do think that kind of the winds are blowing in our direction, but that doesn't mean that our campaign is going to be an easy one. It's not. It's going to be hard as hell. So what we're doing is we've been hosting a series of town halls. So we already held one in Astoria. We held one in Flatbush in October. And then we're actually holding a number of them in February. We're holding the week of February 17th. We'll be holding a town hall in Flatbush. We'll be holding a town hall in Windsor Terrace. We'll be holding, and then I believe, two town halls in Queens, right? Or just one?
Yeah, one in Queens in February and then another in East Queens in March.
In March, yeah. So we're hosting a number of these town halls. And energy is a really complicated thing, as you know, for our listeners, as you can clearly hear by all of these acronyms we're using and this complex stuff. And it's supposed to be complicated because it's supposed to keep people from getting involved. So these town halls are really important because they give people the chance to educate and they give us something to organize around. From those town halls that we're going to have, and obviously we would love for you to show up. But from those town halls, we're really going to start pressuring lawmakers. This is going to be a really intense session in Albany. Obviously, all of the senators and assembly members are up for re-election in 2020. So this is really a great opportunity to have a mass movement to really pressure our legislators. One kind of the model we've been using is the really successful Housing Justice campaign that happened last year, where they won a number of really fantastic rent reforms. We're modeling off of that, but really the goal is to build a broad-based coalition, build deep community ties, and use our campaign to further organizing. So the thing with Albany, I've like described it as like there's this Russian card game called Durak, which means like fool or idiot. And the reason it's called fool or idiot is if you lose, you're the fool or the idiot. And you're supposed to cheat in this game. So like losing is, you know, you're the fool for having everyone cheat, for letting everyone cheat. Politics in Albany is kind of like that game of Durak. Like, it's totally insider-based. You never know what's happening. There's all of these weird backroom deals happening. One day you think you're winning. The next day you're losing. It's totally nuts. So we need to go. If we're just lobbying in Albany, that's a losing game. We're not going to get anywhere doing that. But if we use our bills as a struggle that we can build a broad-based coalition around, that we can build power around, people power, then we're actually getting somewhere. And that's really the goal. These bills are important. These bills are just a first step. If we are lucky and we win everything, we still have a ways to go with public power. There's still going to be for-profit for-profit utilities out there. We still have a long ways to go for decarbonization, for full democratization. But this is still, these bills are really an opportunity for us to struggle together, to build coalitions, to fight together, and to learn what we need to do that to build power and really take on these really entrenched special interests.
Yeah, and in comparison to Con Ed, they only had public hearings in Manhattan, in Westchester, on this huge rate hike that will affect millions of New Yorkers. But DSA is doing the work, holding these town halls, and you can actually, if you listen to some past episodes of RPM on our Simplecast, we did some episodes on the Astoria town hall. So definitely take a listen to those. We also have about 15 minutes left of the show, so we'd really like to open up our phone lines to callers. You know, let us know, do you have a Con Ed story? Do you have a National Grid story? What do you think about public power? So you can call us at 212-209-2877. Again, that number is 212-209-2877. 7-7. And so before we listen to our callers, recently Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez endorsed the public power campaign that New York City DSA is running. How does this kind of fit into that bigger vision of a Green New Deal?
So I would like to, there's two possibilities here, right? We do a Green New Deal without public power and then a Green New Deal with public power. A Green New Deal without public power, we have two really powerful companies who both have vested interest in fossil fuel extraction, and they're going to fight everything we try to do at every turn. They're going to try to fight more renewable energy. They're going to try to fight, increased taxes on polluters. They're going to fight investments. They are going to do everything they can to fight this. The other world is a world where we do public power and then do a Green New Deal, or do public power as the base and the first part of a Green New Deal. Well, this would be a huge shift in the Overton window. All of a sudden, the whole world is possible. I mean, you know, renewable investments, that's easy compared to taking over a multi-billion-dollar company, right? Like, everything we want to do in a Green New Deal would become so much easier because we'd have these two roadblocks out of the way, these two companies that would block all of it, but also because we would totally expand our imagination about what is possible with a democratic environmental movement.
Yeah, so let's hear what our callers have to think about that. Caller number one, you are now live on WBAI.
Yes, hi. My name is David. I'm calling from Queens.
Hi, David.
I have a story about Con Ed. Luckily I have a landlord that's very environmentally inclined, and also I'm very careful and, you know, environmentally inclined too. And I install LEDs. He's very helpful as far as appliances that are very Energy Star, you know, very efficient on energy use, electric, and also water. But interestingly, the bill of Con Edison really bothers me a lot because there is a automatic basic charge of almost $29, which means that if you don't even use anything, you unplug every appliance from the wall, it will automatically charge you $29 no matter what. Then you have, you're using very little electricity. That means $16. I'm using about $16, $17 a month. Okay. However, the supply and all the taxes and all the extra charges add another almost $40-something, $48. You know. So it's like, it's like ordering a pizza, and yeah, the pizza's $10, but guess what? We're going to add another $60 fees. And now your pizza is not $10, it's $70. So in one way, this whole encouragement of LEDs and energy efficient appliances is kind of worthless because, okay, every dollar that I use less electric is infinitesimal because all the other charges of delivery and supply, it doesn't make any sense. So I'm not really, it's a disincentive to invest in LEDs and energy-efficient appliances. Plus, we have occupancy sensors. We have, that automatically turn on and turn off in the kitchen and the bathroom. So, Con Edison, it really is saying, hey, it doesn't matter what you do. We're going to make as much money as possible.
Yeah, and that fixed charge is also going to go up once again in this current rate hike. We have another caller on the line. You are now live on WBAI.
Good evening.
Hi, how you doing? What's your story?
I'm doing all right. Well, I wanted to go back to what you were saying about climate denial as being a portion of this. When we see that rate hike, how that's really an indication of how that individual company is engaging in climate denial. And climate denial and effective communication are really at the heart of this. One of your speakers was saying before, that the Democrats and the left are on board. And it immediately jumped out to me. Because I'm a lifelong Republican and I'm on board too. But when we're talking about climate denial, much like the anti-vax movement, the idea is so entrenched that it's almost impossible to move that person from their point of view where it is now to another point of view. And we're going to need that to effectively reach across the aisle and make headway here.
And I think that's, one reason why knocking on doors and having these town halls is so important, that you're having those conversations with people in public. We do have another caller on the line. You are now live on WBAI.
Oh, good. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm calling from the Bronx. And I had two issues. One, I heard you got in late, so I didn't hear the location of town hall meetings for the Bronx. I didn't hear that at all. So, you know, I'll listen for that. But I agree with the gentleman that got on about the basic charge. We have many people in the Bronx and co-ops and spaces, snowbirds that are not using, you know, are not making use of, or, you know, so the basic charge of almost $30 is just exorbitant. Also seniors, many seniors sometimes stop using their ovens and kind of work on maybe smaller I forgot what you call them, but microwaves and the like. So I'd like to see that basic charge, you know, go down significantly because they're socking it to us. Okay. So could you talk about that?
Yes, yeah, so we'll finish up the show with how people can get involved in learning more about the town halls. And before we do that, we want to do one more caller on. You are now live on WBAI.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, we can hear you.
Yes, thank you so much. You guys are so brilliant, and you are. I gotta congratulate you. You have so much passion, and I'm on fire with you guys because the Con Edison is so crooked. Number one. You know about opting out of smart meters, right? We don't want our smart meters. And they say that the businesses in our building, the stores in our building, do not have that option. They have to have smart meters. But this is so crooked, you know. Also, our meter reader was great. We had the same guy all the time. Now they say they can't get in because they switch the meter reader every time. So the guy can't learn the route. I mean, it's just so many little games they play, you know?
Yeah, and our bills will be going up. One of the things they're paying for is to install those smart meters. We have one final caller. Caller, if you can be brief, we only have a few minutes left. But you're now live on WBAI.
All right. Thank you so much for taking my call. Two things real quick. My Con Ed story is I had a roommate in Staten Island when I first moved to New York and was running a place. The money I gave him for utilities, he was spending on student loans instead of utilities, so we had the power go off, and instead of, then we paid it immediately, I was like, you know, and they took like, I would say 4 to 5 days, I would say at least 4 days to turn it back on. When they come back to turn it on, all they have to do is flick a switch on. So you're talking about everything in the fridge goes bad, all that stuff. So I'm just saying, don't trust these people for a second. My second point, quickly, I know we need a Green New Deal so badly. I'm a worker in... It's a green job that, you know, it works with Empower program, which, takes money, a little bit of money from utilities, and maybe this could help with the plan going forward here. A little surcharge leaves this Empower program, you get like $5,000, about insulation jobs on your home. But the work that we do is incredibly difficult. We deserve a union. If you could make them socialized, if you can make them state jobs, they'll be much better because they'd be regulated. And, yes, every millennial, this isn't a choice anymore.
Yeah, so thank you so much to all of our callers. A lot of people want to know how they can get involved in this campaign. It seems like people are very excited. How can people learn more about Public Power and get involved?
So you can go to publicpower.nyc. That's our website. And you can there you'll have information about you getting onto our listserv. And we'll also have information about the town halls there as we finalize spaces and times and locations and all that good stuff. So publicpower.nyc, go there. That should have all the information that you need.
We also have just a quick announcement. We have a meeting tomorrow where we're going to be talking about the rate hike that just went through and what you can do to help in these town halls. That's at 131 West 33rd Street from 7 to 9 p.m., but come at 6:30 p.m. if you're a new member and want to learn more about the campaign and how you can get involved. And if you're really fired up and want to call your elected, we really need that, you can go to bit.ly/phonesapp, all lowercase, and call your elected and ask them to co-sponsor these bills and ask them to take a stand. We did a big phonesapp the other day, and it was really successful in getting people to co-sponsor these bills and really make them a priority.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. Also, if you're interested in learning more about the pipeline that National Grid is building in North Brooklyn, there will be a meeting at the Bushwick Library on Thursday at 6 p.m. Next week's episode, we will be focusing on museum workers who are organizing for justice in their industry. But before that, they are having a kickoff party at PS 122 Gallery in the East Village. So make sure you tune in next week with Amy Wilson to learn about how museum workers are organizing. And thank you so much for listening to Revolutions Per Minute on WBAI in 99.5 FM. We will see you next week, New York City.